A hanging chairlift that you cannot get off, or just letting it go, singing on a mountain after you've turned your... Actually, we'll get into whether they do actually have seasons at Arendelle. But of course, we are talking about Frozen. Frozen, Adam Green's Frozen from 2010, and the Disney Frozen, directed by Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck. Two names I actually thought were made up, but they are actually real people. But so, of course, with me, my usual co-host, Bede, is being fancy at a winery, so couldn't be here. I made him feel guilty very last night. But, of course, I have the amazing editor-chief of After Dark and, of course, the Super Network. It is the amazing Super Marcy. Hey, how's it going?
Hello, hello. I mean, I'm kind of like a way better version of Bede, so
yeah, you are kind of good. Yeah.
How dare you be drinking wine, Bede, and not discussing these two fabulous films with us.
I know. I gave him lots of shite last night for it. So the AFCA Critics Awards were last night, and there's an open bar, so I usually get drunk and belligerent. never put me in front of a free bar, that's all I'm gonna say. But it was a great night. But we are here to talk about all things Frozen. So we are leaving summer in Australia and heading into the amazing autumn. So it seems fitting that we're gonna be talking about two winter wonderlands. Yes. But anyway, first of all, how are you going, Marcy?
Doing well, doing well. Yeah, in like a couple of months, we will be in our own frozen wonderland of Melbourne winter that is gonna have no idea what it's doing. Can't wait for that. But yes, doing well, just you trying to keep up to date on all the podcasts because there's like a billion of them.
You have brought back your Ozploitation cast. I think your Stephen Book Club one as well. I mean, yeah, some things are coming back, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, literally all of the podcasts under the Super Network are all back and kind of in the space of being monthly episodes, or at least every 6 to 8 weeks, so it's very consistent. But the Ozploit cast is the last Friday of every month, so that at least is on a regular rotation monthly, thankfully.
Yes, no, it's good to have some of those back. I've always particularly enjoyed the Ozploitation cast, so no, it's happy that you are able to do this again. So this is all wonderful, and glad to have you on for this, because I know you're particularly... I know we brought you on because you're a big fan of, what did we do last month? Yeah, this is what happens when there's a free bar, of Black Sheep 2006, but you are a huge fan of the 2013 Disney. So I cannot wait to get your perspectives on that movie. But first, we have to be stuck in a friggin' chairlift over a cold night, in a snowy, freezing cold night. But two people that you may not actually end up liking. Well, actually, no, she loves one and grows to like the other one. There's a journey with Frozen 2010. So we're going to start with Adam Green's Frozen. As always, we're sitting in a theater, the curtains are opening, and Marcy, what is going to be your first trailer for the 2010 Frozen?
Yeah, my first trailer for the 2010 Frozen. And I feel like we have to make that distinction every 20 title. It's like this particular
this
version.
One.
I sort of thought quite a bit about what I think would be a good film to kind of put with it. And my second trailer is one of Bede's choices. So he's here in spirit, but his choice can go second for now. My first choice is the, I think it's from 2000, Vertical Limit.
I think we've lost the summit team. This is Bede's camp, do you copy? This is Peter Garrett speaking.
Come in.
Peter.
I got 22 hours, if they're lucky.
Don't risk it.
I won't let my sister die.
That's gonna be a speed ascent climbing in pairs.
They think it's suicide.
I'll write a check to whoever goes. $500,000.
Now, the lives of three.
My brother's got explosives. Says they're gonna blast their way down.
Strap on the nitro.
Will depend on the courage of six.
On a rescue mission, we don't vote, we don't question, we don't argue. You listen and do exactly as I say.
Which is about being stuck up a very cold mountain. I think it's the, is it the K2? I think they're stuck up.
Yes.
On that mountain. And it's got, it's a Martin Campbell directed film. And what have we got? Like Chris O'Donnell, Bill Paxton, Robin Tunney. It's got a pretty cool cast. But yeah, Scott Glenn. It's a little intense kind of rescue film, and I feel like it's not to the extent of how Frozen is, but I think it would make an interesting pairing as kind of two very different sort of very cold survival type films.
Yes, this is, I haven't seen this for a long time, but I know I'm pretty sure Film Feast has done an amazing episode on Vertical Limit, if you want to go listen to that. Pretty sure it was the amazing Mark Warner giving blow detail of how weird this movie is, and I'm like, yeah, that's Vertical Limit. This has one of the most insane opening scenes I think I've seen in a long time. Of course, because this is 2000, someone falls off a mountain and you're like, holy shit, what the, I don't know, just the way it's filmed, Martin Campbell went all in on just... Mm. But no, I mean, this is a great cast. It's kind of a time capsule of 2000.
Yeah.
Which I am starting to get a weird nostalgia for, which I never thought I would for this time period. But here we are. No, this is a great, great trailer because it is kind of a survival rescue trailer, so...
Yeah, and I actually remember seeing it maybe opening weekend at the movies back in the day, and then I think I had it on... Might have had it on video even still.
Oh no, we had, yeah, video was still way around, I think, especially New Zealand. So I can imagine Australia kept on to VHS quite a while.
I'm pretty sure I had it on VHS and would watch it every so often because I just quite enjoyed the movie.
It's, yeah, no, from memory, it's a fun movie. My first, I'm going to leave my survival one to the end because it is, well, we'll get into it. But because we are doing the two Frozens and Sean Ashmore is in the 2010 Frozen, of course, I had to go with X2 from 2003.
I feel a great swell of pity for the poor soul who comes to that school looking for trouble. What's happened to you?
Don't you remember?
You should have killed me when you had the chance!
Professor.
You haven't told him about his past.
Who is he?
I can't remember.
Sometimes anger can help you survive.
The war has begun.
Because we... Sorry, I'm going to be talking about this night because apparently we were just talking about how we didn't realize X-Men could be a queer narrative until X2, because you have that very explicit scene with Sean Ashmore visiting his parents or hiding at his parents' house. And they just go, well, can't you just not be a mutant? And then I just went, oh, I know what this is.
Yes.
And Sean Ashmore is playing Iceman.
She tilts her head and it's like, have you tried not being a mutant? And it's like, oh, shut up, bitch.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just like, oh, yeah. It's just like explicitly saying what this is. But as I said, Sean Ashmore is playing Iceman. And now he's in a movie where he is freezing on top of a chairlift.
I mean, he really needed those Iceman powers for Frozen. He really did.
If he was Iceman, they would have gotten this and there would be no wolf carnage.
Yeah, there would have been no movie if he had his Iceman powers. But
I would not have been as stressed if he had been in charge of that. But no, I think this is a really great superhero movie. Again, it's one of those early 2000s ones that was still trying to figure out how they could use black leather in interesting ways. It is, but it's got, again, that cast that Disney, even though they're going to remake their own X-Men with a new cast, they can't, they know that they can't just leave Patrick Stewart and
Ian McKellen
and Hugh Jackman in the past. They have to kind of go, well, we understand that this is a beloved cast for this series, and we're going to keep bringing them back whether they want to or not.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's like, can I just not be buff for like 1 week? Do I have to keep doing this?
Yes, you have to remain buff forever.
Yes, you have to remain on a strict diet and probably some sort of things that get injected into you to keep this physique. Yeah, that is going to be my first trailer. I do enjoy this movie. I love that opening scene with Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler in the White House. Oh, I think it's one of the best.
Amazing. Oh,
so good. Marcy, what is going to be your second trailer for Frozen 2010?
Yeah, so I had considered a few films, and funnily enough, Bede went with one that I was considering. So seeing as he's not here because he's drinking wine, I thought I'd be nice and go with his picks for each movie second trailer. We're going with The Grey.
We need a fire. Can we find food? If we don't move and work now, we're all freeze to death.
Somebody will find us.
They gotta know that plane went off the radar.
Nobody's gonna find us. Not here. We figure out what way is south and we start walking.
This will be one of those wild stories you tell at a party.
What is it? Get up, get up!
Don't move. Stare right back at him. Get to that tree line. We can better defend ourselves.
Go, go, go!
Hold on!
You gotta be kidding me.
We can climb down.
If we follow the river, we got a better chance of finding shelter.
With Liam Neeson surviving in the cold after a plane crash, and there might or may not be a bunch of wolves around. So it kind of fits in a pretty decently with Frozen.
Really does. If The Grey had just been Liam Neeson punching wolves, I still would have kind of enjoyed it on some level. But Joe Carnahan turned it into this metaphor for masculinity not being able to handle nature. Like, there's a thing when Grillo is sitting, I think he's about to die, and he's just sitting there looking at the Alaskan landscape. You just hear the sigh of pain and of awe, and I'm just like, that's The Grey. It is just, nature will always win, no matter what.
Yes, it's a fantastic film. I loved it. The second I saw it, I'm like, holy shit, that's a fucking movie. And yeah, like, it was one of the films that popped into my head in regards to pairing it with Frozen, and you definitely got the wolves there. So
you do, though.
And the survival and the cold and everything else. No ski lifts, but
yes, no ski lifts, but a plane crash. No, this was because I remember getting my partner to watch it with my partner, because this is the same thing with Roadhouse. Do I watch it tonight or tomorrow? But I think I might need to watch it with Dan, because I think he's going to like the new Roadhouse. So I think I'm going to have to wait to see it when he comes. Yeah, I mean, It's a really great movie. I mean, I sold it to my partner saying, yeah, it's Liam Neeson punches wolves. Like, this is going to be great. And that's not what the movie is. He does, in fact, punch a wolf, or it looks like he is going to punch a wolf, but it's not that. It's not what the movie is. My final trailer, I am going to go for maybe one of the ultimate survival snow movies, a story that I am kind of a touch obsessed with, which is not, probably, there's got a lot of problematic things considering this is an actual true story and people who are now still alive have went through this. But I'm going to do a mashup because two movies have been made on this event. I'm going to go for the 1993 Alive mashed up with last year's AJ Bowena's Society of the Snow.
As you analyze a lot, you remember people, heroism, the miracle of the Andes, that's what they called it.
Sabemos dónde estamos.
Mírame los ojos. Mírame los ojos.
De allá no se ve.
¿Y aunque pasen por encima nuestro no van a ver?
¿Qué pasa cuando el mundo te abandona?
¡Ayuda!
To be affronted by solitude without decadence or a single material thing to prostitute it elevates you to a spiritual plane where I felt the presence of God.
Now, if you don't know what these movies are about, they are about a Ugandan rugby team who were flying over to Chile for I think just a showcase game, and they crashed into the side of a mountain in the Andes and proceeded to survive for over 2 months. Now, how they did this was that it's not quite cannibalism because they didn't kill to eat. These were already people who had died in the plane crash, but that is how they survived, for they ate their fallen friends. A story I've been, because I remember seeing the trailer for Alive when I was a kid and being so horrified that I kind of had to start reading about what happened. And then this is, of course, Ethan Hawke and, oh, shoot, Lucas. So I should have brought the cast.
Oh, my
it's
God.
A whole bunch of, well, actually, the boys in Society of the Snow are very pretty as well. So we can't really kind of do that. But it's two versions. One is by a Spanish director, J.A. Boena, who I generally like. And this is kind of the Spanish version with the American glitzy Frank Marshall, of all people, directing it. But they're both really kind of good case studies for how you treat this material. And I would say Society of the Snow is probably the better version because I think he's putting a little bit more depth into it. But yeah, I'm going to go a mashup of people stuck on the side of the mountain eating dead people because I don't know why the story fascinates me as it does.
It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
They survived for 2 months. They're still taking interviews and talking about it. I'm like, how? I mean,
how? But well done.
Yes, I will say that the plane crash in the Boena Society of the Snow movie is one of the most horrifying things I've seen in a while. There's a way that, yeah, go watch it. It's actually very good, even though it is very hard to watch. But yeah, those are going to be my trailers of trying to survive on a mountain.
Very nice.
Not easy. And with that not being easy, we're going to get into a movie that is about people stuck up high, not being able to get out, and me realizing when I'm watching it going, oh, this might actually be one of my worst fears.
Last run, gotta make it count.
He's leaving you to die on something so simple as a chairlift that you don't usually think this is how you're gonna. It's not usually on the list of things you think of how you're gonna go out, is it? Is it, Marcy?
No, not at all. And that's what I think works with this film, is that it's just something so basic that if you're in mountains and go skiing and stuff, the ski lift, like, you just up and off that thing all day, every day when you're there. So you don't think of that being stuck for days while you're on there being sort of like, fuck, how is someone going to survive this? But this movie was like, well, we're going to do something about that. We're going to make you scared of these fucking things.
Yeah, had you seen this before we did this episode?
Yeah, I saw it when it came out and I reviewed it back then, but yeah. I hadn't seen it since. So it was a good one to rewatch because I had kind of thought about it previously, being like, oh, I wonder if it still holds up and da da da. And yeah, it definitely does.
It really does. I mean, as soon as I started watching it, because I'd seen it once before, it was a few years after it came out, maybe 10 years ago. And it was, I wonder if this is going to hold up. And from the first kind of frames, I was getting stressed. I was like, oh yeah, they're going to be stuck on a chairlift. This isn't at night and they're not, and again, no one's coming back for days. Like if this was just a night, they probably would have sat it out. But the fact that it was closed for 5 days, I think they went, oh, fuck. And it's really well set up at the beginning because you get to know all, because it's three people. It is, as I said, the aforementioned Sean Ashmore, Emma Bell, and Kevin Zegers. I'm butchering that wrong. But it is literally those three just on a ski lift. And because there's three people, there's no room to really maneuver around on it.
It's, the film, like most kind of horrific films, it's like, oh yeah, here's the group of friends, da da da, and you're like, you guys are all right. I don't know if you're the best people I want to hang around with, but it's sort of done like they could definitely be just three people you might know in life. So there's nothing overly awful or overly great about them. They just feel like normal flawed people. And once you realize they're kind of stuck in that situation, it's when you know what's going to happen. Like, you know they're not going to be able to decide what to do and how to approach things. They're not going to be cool-handed in a tough situation. Like, you feel that from getting to know them at that opening, I feel like.
You do. You get the dynamic really well. The fact that Emma Bell is dating Kevin, you do get that sense of, okay, they're dating, and Sean Ashmore kind of feels like the third wheel.
Yeah.
And is not happy about the fact that, because he just keeps saying, I just want a good run. He even, spoilers, when Kevin is eaten by wolves, and in a thing that Adam Green is just like, oh, I'm going to make this hurt for everyone. I'm just not going to, those wolves got close to that poor kid. So you get the dynamic set up really well. So when they're getting stuck on there, it's really easy to understand the dynamics of what happens and what each character is doing and why they are doing it.
Like, you can understand that, like, Kevin is, I guess he sort of sees himself maybe the leader of it, because
he does, he
kind of shuts down like Sean Ashmore's shit a little bit. Like, maybe it's to look good in front of his girlfriend or whatever,
he's trying to be the leader and he's trying to keep everyone happy, which is a really interesting dynamic. Yeah. Mm. But he has to like shut down Sean, who's kind of being a dick at times. So
yeah. And he's sort of the one who's trying to think of how to get out of the situation when they get there. But at the same time, it's because they were like, oh, if we pay the dude and we get to go on the lift and all this stuff, like, you know, their I guess, insistence on doing the wrong thing because the place is closing up for the week.
They have to go on that last run. They
They should have been smarter than to do that, but their own kind of stupidity put them there. But then the guy that knows they're there just kind of fucks off and forgets about it. And then that's kind of it. Like, that dude didn't remember to do anything.
It's kind of what I love about this double is that they are both, because I think snowy wilderness kind of evokes this fairy tale atmosphere, and fairy tales are always a morality story. If you do this, this will happen. If you go into the woods, you will meet a wolf. Mm. And this is very much interwoven. Like, I really do like Adam Green as a director, because I think he gets kind of the what happens when you go into the woods. I mean, this is the guy who also came up with Victor Crowley.
Yes.
And so he very much understands there's something deep and dark in the woods. And if you go into this place, you're in a place of another world. And I think Frozen does this as well, as we get into with the 2013, which is very much a fairy tale. It's based on Jules Eno. What's the guy who did The Little Mermaid?
Hans Christian Andersen.
Hans Christian Andersen, thank you. It is, so that is just purely that, but this is very much a, if you go into the woods, you're bound for a big surprise. And because they are trying to, because there's a third person, they're trying to get cheaper ski lift tickets. They really have to go on the last run just before it closes. They have to make all these things, and it's Kevin just trying to keep both his girlfriend and his best friend happy, who may not be thrilled that the other person is there. Like, you can kind of see Emma Bell going, oh, but I'm kind of weak and need help and I want to be with my boyfriend. And then Sean's just like going, dude, why is the girl here? Yeah. So they're kind of playing on these specific dynamics with him. And once he's gone, that's when they have to drop all the facades and be actual themselves a little bit more, which is this really interesting sort of dynamic. But yeah, it's, if you try and get cheap airplane tickets and have to go for that last run, you will get stuck on a chairlift and you will be eaten by wolves. So that is
pretty much like, they're trusting that the guy's going to do the right thing and stay there the whole time and wait for them.
He's not. He's annoyed with these guys.
But he's not. He's been called away. The other guy doesn't give two shits.
He didn't know. He thought the other people coming back was like, well, they're back. So yeah, why do I need to worry about these other guys?
What the fuck? And then it's a series of very poor circumstances that they could have avoided if they, you know, they weren't. But again, like you say, Kevin's trying to please both people in his life. But then when the three of them get stuck up there and it's like, well, what the fuck do we do? And Kevin is like, well, I have to get down. Someone's got to go down.
I have to save everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And ultimately, he doesn't know how to fall off something because, so I suppose he would have, if he didn't break his legs, he might have broken his back, but I feel like maybe he would have had a better chance if he hurt his back than what happens to his legs. He might have.
I mean, there's one thing, because when Emma finally falls down, she's like, her ankle's done, but she's fine. So she's able to kind of slide down the mountain. Sean would have been fine if he hadn't ruined his hands, but was trying to fend off a whole bunch. Okay, we'll get to this. I do think the wolves are kind of dickish in this movie. I mean, they were full after thing. They didn't need to eat Sean as well.
They really didn't, but we get the idea. It's been a couple of days at least.
And, yeah, these guys are very hungry and they're not going to let these...
I mean, maybe Kevin just didn't have enough meat for all of them that they were still hungry.
They're very hungry wolves, because usually wolves will go for someone that is wounded, probably like Kevin. If they're hungry, they will go, right, he's down.
It's easy. It's easy prey. Yeah.
Sean, you're going to have to work a little bit, so they don't always... But this is a fairy tale, and if you go into the woods, the wolves will get you. So it's just, that is how it goes. And let it go, if you will. there's going to be a lot of let it go in this
tunnel. Kevin let it go, but he didn't he didn't have quite the right landing. You know.
No, when you see him...
The second he lands, he's fucked. He's done. He's dead. You know, something's going to happen, and
if you've seen any of the Victor Crowley movies, I forgot what the actual three first movies. Hatchet. If you've seen any of the Hatchet movies, and then, of course, the Victor Crowley, you know Adam Green loves a gore moment. He loves a practical gore moment. He loves a Crowley fisting up a woman's vagina and then the hand going up over in her mouth. Like, that is kind of... This is a man who revels in kind of the practical gore of the horror genre.
Over the top, practical effects. Like, we got to make it pack a punch kind of thing. But
yes,
here, and it's not quite... It's still in the vein of something that's, like, exploitative, but not to ridiculousness of how Victor Crowley will kill someone. But
this is true.
The wolves don't exactly hold back either.
No, but when Zach says, okay, I'm gonna jump, and then even if I'm hurt I can slide down the mountain, not knowing that both of his leg bones are going to be popping out his legs. It's not one, it's both. And you see the bones, he's screaming, and it takes, from when he falls and everyone's trying to give him advice on how to fix his legs, no one knows how to do in this situation, because who knew that you're going to be stuck in a chairlift quite a few meters over the ground. Then the wolves come, and then they start circling him. So even though I would say those are exploitative moments within the movie, because Adam's going, oh, you know what's going to happen. Mm. I'm just going to make you wait for it, and I'm just going to build up the tension. And
because before he even dives down, we hear the wolves. Like, we yes. know this is going to get fucked pretty quickly.
Yes, this is not going to end well for really anyone. And I love the fact that frostbite's already starting to set in the first few hours. They've already got being pelted with the snowfall. This is... because when you say stuck in the chairlift, it doesn't sound that bad.
But when you're sort of like 20, 30 meters up, stuck in a chairlift.
And it's dark and the park is closed for four days.
No, minus whatever degrees it is. Like, you're fucked.
Yeah, you really are. There is no getting out of this. So, and when you're in your 20s, you can go, yeah, I can totally jump. Like, this is going to be fine. So I think... even though they're not as over the top and completely like, oh my God, did I just see that thing happen on screen with the Hatchet movies? This movie is a bit more subtle in it, but then you still get bones just popping out of legs. You do get, I forgot how much of the wolf attack they actually show.
Yeah, it gives you quite a bit, but the sound design of it all really hits, I think.
I remember the sound design, and I remember the camera being on Sean and Emma when they were listening to him getting it. He's like, oh, like, the wolves are killing me, kind of thing. But I didn't realize how much you stayed with him down on the ground with the wolves as well. He really cuts away, like, not even the last second. You do see, like, wolf grabbing onto flesh kind of
thing. Yeah, so, it's intercut with, like, the reactions up there with what's happening down there. But I think it's done in such a way that you really get the horror of this situation. Like, not only are they stuck up there, but if they get down, that's what's waiting for them. And the wolves are, like, the mean-spiritedness that exists within the movie, because they don't give a shit. They're hunter animals.
And Adam Green makes very mean movies. I mean,
yes.
I do want to point out that one of the characters is called Joe Lynch, which is a very good friend of his who's also a filmmaker, who had made things like Wrong Turn 2. Oh, he's actually, I'm more of an Adam Green guy, but Joe Lynch is a really fun director. And I think that is why Sean's character also gets eaten by wolves, because he's like, no, Joe Lynch is getting slaughtered in this movie. There is
pretty much.
Yeah.
But again, it's sort of to give you like this almost a no-win situation that these people are left in. Because when it's the two of them, like, they're not the ones who are in a relationship. They're the ones who are sort of at odds with each other. So that adds to... the you know, of being stuck. But then it gets to a point where they have to do something, and this is where it really kind of amps up with the tension, because they're either gonna freeze or they're gonna fall,
or they're gonna starve.
Which
one's gonna get them first?
And it gets to be a very dire situation, because there's parts of the lift that are starting to come loose. And I mean, I'm thinking, like, why they had like the ski poles, and I'm like, why didn't they hook that over the like the cable and like rolled with that? But maybe that was too clever of an idea, or maybe it would have shattered straight away. I don't know either,
but they threw them really quickly when the car's going past. Which is really natural experience, because when you're kind of starting to freak out and you see like a truck, you're going to throw everything you can at them, and the guy doesn't notice. I mean, she even throws her glove. So when Emma's only got one glove, and that's going to get into another practical effect we'll get into, you could tell they're not thinking, but at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily be thinking.
Yeah. It's hard, because like they don't, until Kevin I've come from the character's name, Zach, mentioned that like on like further down on the track there's like a ladder to climb down and all that stuff. So that's not something they think about till
later.
It's a bit later, and then they're like, oh well, that the cable's gonna like eat through your hands and stuff. But hands do not get treated well in this movie, as you alluded to.
Yeah, before we get into...
I mean, neither do legs, to be fair.
Oh, nothing. Everything gets broken in this movie. I do want to point out, when it's just Joe Lynch and Parker, who are... and Dean is the guy who gets first eaten. I left on the chairlift after Dan has been consumed. And they do have to drop their pretenses a little, which I think is a really good emotional kind of thing to the movie, which these movies don't necessarily need to have, because you're not there to get to know the characters. You're there to see who gets eaten, who gets their skin ripped off, this kind of... You're there for the survival nature of it. So the fact they have to drop this sort of pretenses of being cute girlfriend and being tough best friend, I think lets them kind of communicate in a way where they can kind of understand each other a little.
Yeah, they have to like drop the bullshit. And
they do have to drop the bullshit a little bit, especially when Dan's no longer there.
Yeah, survival time kind of thing. But
you
like,
need each other now, so yeah.
Yeah, and you sort of, I like how we kind of get, you know, we see the frostbite start to take on her face.
Yeah.
But then it gets worse, like, as we could, like, the way you can see their faces kind of deteriorate as the film goes on, I think is really, really well done. It looks very realistic and very natural.
It does.
I like that consistency, I suppose.
Yeah, and you sort of see them, the initial panic, them doing stupid things, and then by the next day, they're much more, well, this is our life now. Mm. So we kind of need to think about this a little bit. And the idea of climbing across the cable, even though it will rip your hands apart, is actually not a terrible idea. It's more practical than jumping off the thing and then breaking both your legs. And
yeah.
Then it's just unfortunately the wolves are still there and like, oh no, Joe's dead. I like the taste of Joe.
They were ready for it, but like
they were waiting.
He had his gloves, so but like yeah, though no, he said like breaking through it, obviously. But
he
like,
tried it before once and then couldn't do it, and he says, "Oh, they've broken through my gloves." So he knows then, when he does it again, it's his hands are gonna get.
Yeah, and that's when he's like, "No, I gotta harden the fuck up and try to do this," like because those consequences. I mean, the situation is dire, but poor Emma Bell, like. They have no choice but to kind of fall asleep and her bare hand on the metal frame and it's like, oh my God.
When you see it, when you wake up and she wakes up, you're like, oh no.
And it's fine. She's trying to move it and she's like, it's not. And she knows she's going to have to rip skin
Adam Green, fucked. There's a shot of seeing the skin cool down like a lot and just... And she's trying not to scream out because she doesn't want to wake Joe.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh no, I'd be waking Joe.
I'd be screaming. So fucking hard right now.
But that's kind of the thing you have to do. And that's kind of the essence of what a survival movie is. Yes, I keep comparing it to a fairy tale because it's if you do this, these are the consequences. But it's also at its heart a survival movie. Like I was going to pick Green Room as a trailer, which I know you haven't seen, but it'd be interesting to see what you think of it because... Oh shit, that movie's intense because it is literally these guys stuck in a room surrounded by neo-Nazis and you're like, how do we get out of this? Can we get out of this? And every single, and plus it doesn't help that Patrick Stewart is like the head neo-Nazi and I'm just looking at him going, no, I don't like this.
Yeah, I do need to check it out.
But no, it is a very well done movie, but it's kind of the movie where I have to get up and walk around. And Frozen, I had to get up and walk around to prove I could just get up and walk around.
I'm not stuck to anything.
Yes.
It's very, yeah, if you have, it definitely taps into certain fears that you have as a person. But like, now I've seen this movie like twice. I'm like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not going in a fucking ski chairlift thing. No.
I don't like heights. So that's...
I don't like heights either.
I mean, something like Blair Witch can still... Watching this, I realized, oh yeah, this is why I don't watch a lot of survival horror, because I'm generally, except apparently if it's Society of the Snow, but though it's not a movie I'm going to go back to again, but that is much more brings in the Catholicism and the transmutation, the word when you're swallowing the bread that turns into the body of Christ, the
communion,
it's not, there's another word for communion, but it's that kind of thing, how it transforms. Yeah. It goes and plays into that a lot. Where the Frozen, the Alive movie is all about the shock and horror and the thing of like, this is what they have to do. Whereas in Society of the Snow, it's purely a survival decision. Mm. And because they're Catholic, that's how they can kind of justify it to themselves. The kind of the transformation process of eating flesh because of you take the wafer, it's the body of Christ. Drinking the wine, it's the turns into blood. Which, yeah, we need to talk about more about how Catholicism's pretty much like it got a cannibal aspect to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's got a little bit in there. Sorry, I'm not Catholic, so I can look at the outside going in going, it's a bit weird, guys.
It is a bit weird. Like, growing up in Catholic, like, in even Catholic school and all that, and it's like, this is really kind of weird.
Yeah, this is kind of like the best horror kind of movie ever, but it's just like, you're not treating it like that. You're treating it as like a... So, but this which is what, but going back, this is why when I watch a survival movie, I need to grasp onto something like that, because otherwise I just get really uncomfortable. Even something like Blair Witch, being stuck in the woods and not knowing how to get out is a terrifying notion to me. Just not knowing where I am, I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of movies like that just tap into sort of those fears, even though it might not necessarily be the whole thing the movie's about or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like being stuck somewhere or just, it can look at, like, Frozen almost gives you this unwinnable situation.
It does.
And you are really not sure, like, especially when it's down to the two of them, you're like, I don't know
if anyone's gonna survive,
if they're gonna make it. And yeah, it really sort of like it does such a great job of building up the tension that there is. It's a very intense film, but then when it gets to that end climax, it's sort of that it's do or die time. And unfortunately for, as we mentioned, Sean Ashmore, it's kind of die time for him.
It is. I like the whole scene where he's like, you don't know if he's even going to survive going across the wire, because doing that, even with, if you had a pole, I think the chances of you falling down are really thing. But he gets the ladder, he goes down, but as soon as he's on the ground, there's the wolves.
Yeah.
And you just see him running away. So you don't see him die, like, you don't actually know until you know if he made it or not. But Parker's kind of, she waits a whole day, I think. She, like, falls, does she wait another day, or does she that
afternoon? I feel like it was a bit later, because the, she's trying to get up from the ski.
I think she's realizing chairlift, that.
But it's coming loose, and so yeah, she falls.
But she's already trying to get onto, I think she's realizing he's not coming back. She needs to try and get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is already falling. Time, he's gone off the thing. It's kind of hanging on a weird angle. And she's just, it's not like, it's, she knows that I have to get off this thing at some point. If he's not coming back, then I have to do it myself.
Yeah.
Which is when the whole thing falls. Yeah.
Yeah. She falls off it and then it falls. And it's like, okay, she made a good landing. But then that thing fucking lands straight on her foot. So it's like,
I like how it falls on it. Like, usually people roll away really quickly, or very good reflexes. No, if you've been up there for like even like 2 days or however long there she's up there, you're not moving.
So she had no chance to move with that thing crashing on her. So she's got another obstacle, and then, you know, you think, well, she's got to kind of slide down the mountain, but there's still the wolves in contention
They are still eating Sean. They're pretty full much. Now. They don't need her.
Yeah, they're like, no, we've had enough. Look at her.
Like, I love the thing when she's got, again, this is an Adam Green movie. She's sliding down on her stomach and she just looks to the side and there's this body. And the wolves are just chowing down. They just look at her going, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, they just give her a look and then they're like, we're going back to eating our
and she's just
breakfast.
Like, dude, I'm just going to keep sliding.
So it's like, fuck. And then, obviously she's kind of in with a chance now.
Yes, the wolves have been distracted, which, thank you, Joe Lynch. But no, I mean, it's really cool. She only survives because she's the last one left. It's not, it's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when Sally survives only because she got away. It's not because she had something innately strong about her. Well, maybe because she could run through a window. Maybe she did. But it's very much, actually, no, probably Laurie is actually the best example. She just managed to outrun Michael until he was shot 6 times in the heart. So it's, I like, she's kind of the final girl, but only because she is literally the last one left and got lucky. There's nothing. So when she gets to the side of the road and someone helps her, it's just because she just managed to outlive.
Yeah, she pretty much just managed to outlast them. It wasn't anything about having better skills or better
wit stronger
about you or anything like that. It's just, she just managed to get through the whole thing, and someone saw her on the side of the road and she made it. But it is it is a brutal film, because again, you're sort of left in that no win sort of situation. So it really keeps you on the edge of your seat because you just don't know which way this thing's gonna go. And then it's like, motherfuckers, there's wolves in this movie. So yeah.
And they're particularly dickish, which I like. They're fairy tale wolves. They are these wolves that are lurking in the darkness. That are going to come for you. Yeah, the practical effects are great. I really like all three performances. I think they are just very simple and to the point, but without beating you over the head. You get the dynamics, and then you see how they set the dynamics really well, and then you just see how they play out when they're in that situation. It is, yeah, I think Adam Green kind of makes the, yeah, because I did think about, should I watch Open Water for this to sort of see if it could be a trail? I'm like, then I'd have to watch Open Water, and there is no way I'm watching people lost it, like, in the ocean. That is my worst nightmare. Yeah, like, that.
No, you don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that.
No.
At least in the frozen, they're sitting on a chair, but Open Water, I'm just like, why would you make a movie about that? That's not even, I mean, there are certain movies when I look back, I'm like, oh, that person never stood a chance. Everyone was going to die at the end. In Open Water, I'm like, no, you're just watching someone slowly die because that's the only option that they're going to.
Yeah.
Even without the sharks.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, no, 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 no. I didn't like that idea. Not gonna watch that again.
And I did not watch Open Water, and I think I'm happier for it, actually, to be honest. So don't need to watch everything or every kind of specific of a genre. Sometimes you're just happier just going, I could just watch Frozen again because I do like that movie. Mm. And there is a sense of hope with these characters because Parker survives.
Whereas something like Open Water, there is no hope.
There is no hope. There got to be, even if you kill off all your characters, there has to be a little bit of hope that something might work out, even if it doesn't. Because there's plenty of movies where everyone dies at the end. Any final thoughts on Frozen before we go on to the musical?
If people haven't seen it before or it's been a while, rewatch it or check it out. It's a pretty damn good movie.
It really is. And check out, if you want over-the-top gore, also watch his Hatchet movies. I did notice that he had a lot of references to the show in him and Joe Lynch did called Hellion? No. There's a show, it's about an actual haunted town.
Literally can't think.
But yeah, he's the kind of, he's very Quentin Tarantino. Him and Joe Lynch are both that way. Hellion. They're very, like Quentin Tarantino, they will kind of create their own universe. Everything's a shared universe. So, yes, he may have made a movie about Frozen, but when he would go and make Hatchet, you know this is the same world. It's just one set in the north in the snow and the other one set in New Orleans. But there could be a Victor Crowley walking around those woods as well.
I mean, Victor Crowley could have just as well been a replacement for the wolves.
Exactly. I mean,
what about the same outcome, right?
Kane Hodder did play the chairlift operator. So, and he also does play Victor Crowley as well as Jason Voorhees. So it
and
makes
as
sense.
Well as Victor Crowley's dad, I believe.
Yes, he does. Yes. So it makes sense that he was the guy who just went, I'm not doing this anymore. They can go up there and start and freeze to death. But no, it's a really tight little horror movie. I think it's really good. It's not exactly a movie it is an exploitation movie at its survival movie at its heart, but it's just a really good example of it. Are you ready to go straight on to 2013?
Yes, let's do it.
And with that, we're changing the tone, if not the weather. So we're sitting in the theater, the curtains are opening. Marcy, what is going to be your first trailer for the Frozen 2013?
Pretty much the first thing that kind of came to mind when I was thinking about the trailers was like two things, but I thought I might go a bit more in a different direction, but the other idea I had was pretty much what Bede was going to pick, so that works out anyway. My idea was to have a trailer for the Wicked Broadway musical.
You think you know the story of the Wizard of Oz? Well, think again. They must choose which path their lives will take. Here then are my girls, Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, and our spellbinding colleagues from Wicked!
Don't be afraid.
I'm not. It's the wizard who should be afraid of me. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time.
And it's the version that you can watch from, I have to double check because I don't remember the year. I think it is 2004.
Yes, that makes sense.
2004. So you can watch Wicked, the filmed version from the stage.
So this is, of course, starring Idina Menzel as, now I cannot remember her character name. I know she's, well, but
she's the witch. Wicked Witch.
She's the witch. She's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Kristen Chenoweth is Glinda. So it's like that. Yeah, I think this was sort of the...
That was the OG Broadway.
The role that sort of got people to notice, I guess, Idina Menzel, or she got more famous.
Outside of Broadway. That, I mean, she also is in Rent, which I adore. She plays she sings one of my favorite Broadway songs, Take It or Leave Me. Take Me or Leave Me from Rent. She is a Broadway staple. She does Wicked. Wicked is one of those plays that blows up like Rent did. But then it's a new generation like me. He goes, oh, who's that green lady? She's got a voice.
Yeah. And,
which she does. And because I do remember just after I moved to Melbourne, me and a friend did go see the Australian, or the Melbourne. I don't know if we have a Broadway. It's just Collins Street.
It's just a theatre.
It's just a theatre on Collins Street. It's not as... we have a theatre scene, but we don't have like a West End or Broadway. And
yeah, I mean, the Wicked, I think, has been playing again
on and off ever since then. It's like, we're doing Wicked again, guys. Again. Yeah, it's like every time there's like a lull. Oh, we're doing Wicked again. Okay, cool.
And I mean, it was sort of too early to pick the movie version because that's still ages away from coming out. Yeah,
and that movie looks like that trailer looked like it was made with AI. I mean, that I'm not completely convinced, even though I do love who's playing Wicked Witch of the West. She's really good.
I don't remember because I only watched the trailer like once. And,
and it's hard
because
she's green.
I know. You can't tell when they're green.
Cynthia Erivo, sorry, who is a very, very talented singer and actor. I love everything she's in. So, look, I might do a mashup of the trailer, but it's definitely the Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth version. There is no other person that sings Defying Gravity other than Idina Menzel, as we'll get into when we talk about Frozen. Yeah. So I think, and it's a really... I like the stage show. I don't like all the songs in it. There's a few songs I'm like, oh, did we need that particular one? But when it hits, it hits. And it was such a huge thing that I'm surprised. Well, actually, no, because it's a musical. And even in the trailer, they're trying to hide that it's a musical. I'm like, there is no talking. There is just singing. It's like how they did with Wonka and Mean Girls and The Color Purple. They tried to hide that they were musicals. I'm like,
they're total musicals.
They're total musicals. They're absolutely musicals.
People enjoy musicals. Like, why be ashamed of it? Like,
I don't know, but
they're not
to hide...
always for me or whatever. But you know, like, it's like,
why are you trying to hide that Wicked is a musical? That is what it is. That's what it's in its bones. It's based on a novel that they turned into a Broadway musical.
Yeah, that's the whole. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, how do you not know it's going to be a musical? But like, it's I think it's just that because Frozen has like the whole thing of Frozen is the sister dynamic, which I think that's what the
misunderstood
Wicked is with all those things. Like, they're very similar in those aspects. So I thought that kind of fits with this really, really well. Plus, you have Idina Menzel, so that also helps.
And also, Wicked is very much, if you want me to be the bad guy, I will be the bad guy. If you want me to be a witch, here I am, which is what Defying Gravity song is all about. Is that you want me to be the Wicked Witch of the West? You're gonna get her. So I love, Idina Menzel. Girl can sing. She's got a voice.
Got a voice.
All right. My first trailer. You know what? I'm also gonna go for a fantasy, a Winter Wonderland. I realize this movie is, well, I know what this movie, this novel is. It was one of my favorite novels as a kid. Didn't quite know the analogy until I was much older, but I'm going to go for the 2005 The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Impossible.
Take them. There is a prophecy that two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve will appear to defeat the White Witch. an end to this 100-year winter.
I think you've made a mistake. We're not heroes.
There's no mistake. Aslan is on the move.
Aslan, we need your help.
I know, but understand, the future of Narnia rests on your courage.
If it's a war Aslan wants, it's a war he shall get.
Andrew Adamson adapting the famous novel by C.S. Lewis. The Christian and all, the whole story of Christianity is put into these books. I realize
which
that.
Which I didn't realize till I was older.
Me either. But I just thought it was about a cool lion and a cool witch who gave you Turkish delight.
It was just this cool adventure, like fantasy movie. But like, I read the book growing up, but it was like the BBC version that I grew up with of
yes,
that.
I remember that BBC version
and
too. Yeah.
I absolutely like just loved it as a kid. So that's like my version. But yeah, this was another one that I'd sort of thought about because you've got like the Ice Queen, Snow Queen sort of things in there as well, which
and
matches.
Tilda Swinton.
Yes. At her most, I'm being a campy, awesome.
She is serving cunt in the most delicious way. Like, yes. That is what she's doing. It's, yeah, this, the line, The Witch in the Wardrobe, is so much part of my childhood that I forgot about the BBC version when you said I watched the BBC version. I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I used to watch that all the time too, because I'd read the book. And my favorite thing to do was when I found out there was a movie adaptation, I'd have to seek out that and then you should be really disappointed because it's not the book. And then I realized adaption is not a copying of the text.
Yes.
Anyway. But I do like this version. I haven't seen the others in that series because they were going to turn it into this big mega franchise because, of course, they were. Mm. But that never happened because these books are weird. And when you realize that it's a Christian analogy, you cannot unsee it. So it does change it a little bit. But at the same time, it does have a cool lion. It does have an amazing witch. I would take those Turkish delights in a hot second. Like, I'm not going to be afraid of Stranger Danger when she's in a massive carriage wearing this most amazing outfit showing me Turkish delight. Like, who's going to say no to that? Which I know is the apple. Like, I do realize what that is. It's temptation.
Yeah, but Turkish delight, like, hello.
Like, really good Turkish delight?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is going to be my first trailer. What is going to be your second trailer?
The second one, which again was Bede's choice, and it was one of the ones I thought about anyway, it is Disney's Tangled.
In this tower lived a girl who'd been there a very long time.
I'm prepared to offer you a deal.
Deal?
Look this way. I want to see the world, and not just from my window.
First, I said, no can do. Then I said, let down your help!
I can't believe I did this!
Yay!
Ryan! Who's that?
They don't like me. Let's just assume for the moment that everyone in here doesn't like me. Is there anything else I should know about you?
I have magic hair that has to be protected.
From whom?
We want the girl with the magic hair.
Got to get one of these.
Arms in.
Knees apart.
And I think what makes these two go well is I feel like they have this same, I don't know what the right word is, but there's something that just works really well, at least for me, with both of the films. Like, I think they have songs that really hit well, but they have really great characters. And there's a whole lot of, like, story going on, and it's not, they're both films that aren't so much focused on the princess getting the prince or something like that. They're just like really cool, fun films, and I think that was a really interesting era for Disney with what they were coming out with, doing things a little bit different.
It was their first CGI? It was their first CGI
I think
princess
so
movie.
From memory.
Because I think the one before that was Princess and the Frog, which was definitely animated.
I think so, which
animated.
Was still 2D animation. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I have never seen Tangled. I still need to. I think this was in a weird period where I didn't want anything to do with Disney, except this is the same period where they were buying up as we'll get into with Frozen, I think this is a fascinating period of how they were trying to change the princess because they knew they had to. And also in a period where they were just buying up properties because they were a little bit ashamed of the princess, which is kind of weird. Because Frozen, because Tangled didn't make that huge amounts of money. Frozen did. And they went, oh no, we love the Disney princess. But they didn't make another Disney princess for ages because they were all about, oh, we finally got the boys. We don't need to worry about the girls anymore. When that was their brand, which I'll get into when talk about more when we're into Frozen. But I do need to watch, Tangled because I have heard it is very, very good.
Oh, it's right. You like, I feel like you must be some, you must have an icy cold heart if you do not enjoy Tangled.
Yeah, it looks, it does. And I do like Mandy Moore. Like,
oh, she's so great. Yeah. Like her work in it is, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really well done.
Mm. My final trailer is, again, another wintry, gorgeous movie. And it is Christmas, but hey, you can watch Carol anytime you want.
How many times have you been in love?
You're always the most beautiful woman in the room.
Therese Balivet.
Carol.
Tell me you know what you're doing.
I never did.
And then it changed.
She's still my wife. I love her.
I can't help you with that.
It shouldn't be like this.
I know. If he can't have me, I can't see my daughter. Everything comes full circle.
The great Todd Haynes, 2015. This movie is gorgeous. This is Cate Blanchett playing the ultimate blonde diva who falls in love with... I'm getting the Mara sisters confused.
You have to look it up because I can't think today.
Sorry. Neither can I, apparently. I think it's Rooney Mara, Cate. Cate was in Fantastic Four. It is this beautiful movie of sexuality, of being true to yourself, being a lesbian in the 1950s or being queer in the 1950s when you were not allowed to be. If you were a wife, you were a wife, and that is it. I adore this movie. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. Todd Haynes can make a period drama just sing. The clothes in it are spectacular. It is, and as we'll get into with this, the fact that Disney has not given Elsa a girlfriend is kind of atrocious. But yeah, my trailer is going to be Carol.
I actually haven't seen Carol. It's been on the list for a while. I do know what it's about and everything, but
yeah.
I do like the films of Todd Haynes. So yeah, it should have been one I have already watched, but I have not got to it yet.
Yes, it is Rooney Mara, the main couple. But yes. This movie also has, of course, the great Kyle Chandler and John Marigo, who is becoming one of my favorite actors. So it is, yeah, I would definitely worth a watch. It's a great Christmas movie, and I would definitely recommend it. And if you want to pair it with Eileen, that would not be a terrible double either.
There you go. Well, now it's time for our feature presentation.
I'll bring her back and I'll make this right.
So you're not scared?
She's my sister. She would never hurt me.
Yeah, I bet she's the nicest person ever.
Huh? Am I right? Hi.
You're creepy.
Whoa! I don't want it.
Whoa, back
ew,
at you.
Ew, the body.
Hi, everyone. I'm Olaf.
Did Elsa build you?
Yeah, why?
We need Elsa to bring back Summer.
Olaf!
Now I'm perfect.
Almost. Oh, woo!
Head rush.
So cute. It's like a little baby unicorn.
Ah! Heads up!
It is not nice to throw snow people.
Whoa, feisty pants. Your hair is turning white.
Does it look bad?
No.
You hesitated.
No, I didn't. Yeah! Wolves. I got this.
But I want to help.
Whoa! Whoa.
Whoa! Now we just have to survive this blizzard!
That's no blizzard! That's my sister! For the first time in forever, I'm getting to start dreaming of.
If we don't do something soon, we'll all freeze to death.
I'm going to let you take this one off and start with a maybe lead because I know this movie means a lot to you. and I may not be with you as much as on Frozen as you are, but so I want you to go. When did you first see Frozen? Go for it.
Oh, look, I don't think anybody can match my love of Frozen. I saw it when it first came out. I think I went with Bede to the movies to watch it, and I was just blown away. I'm like, this is not at all like the kind of film I was expecting. I'm like, this is such a really heartfelt like story with true sisters, and sort of one's the outsider because she has these powers that she has to hide away, and I wonder what they're trying to hint at with a lot of this stuff.
I wonder what as well, but we can't do that because this is going to China.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
it's I think it's just handled in a really great way, but we have like people can say what they want, but I really enjoy Kristoff, I enjoy Olaf, Sven. I'm trying to think of all the names. Like,
yes,
it's got wonderful characters, but again, it's the dynamic, it's the relationship between Kristen Bell's Anna and Idina Menzel's Elsa. And I like that we have one's a princess, one's a queen. It's like, oh, fuck you, there's no king here. We're queens and we're gonna, you know, run this place. But she's a bit scared off because of the powers and setting Arendelle into the forever winter.
Well, her parents may be slightly emotionally abusive, so.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, and plus they got lost at sea.
Yes, they died.
Yes, but it sort of gives us something we haven't really seen with Disney. And we have had evil queens, but she is a queen that kind of is very misunderstood and feels like her isolation is best for everybody. And she's sort of, you know, she kind of gets turned into a bit of a villain, but it's that sister relationship that pulls her out of it. And I just really adored everything about it. And it's also special to me because it was my niece's very first like cinema trip movie, because I saw this like once or twice, I don't know, maybe three times at the movies.
You went back is what you're trying to say.
But you know, being able to take my niece to her first movie was very exciting, and it was this one. And I have a bunch of dolls from the movie and Frozen 2, but they're not here right now. But I have lots of Frozen stuff around the place. I just kind of loved it. I feel like everyone has this just one Disney movie that just it hits them in a certain way. Yes. And I think that was Frozen for me, but as a kid it was like Sleeping Beauty was my movie.
Was a possible trailer because of Maleficent. Like, I still haven't seen the Angelina Jolie remake where you kind of get to know her point of view, but in terms of evil, because there's something I love, the image of the Wicked Witch who lives on the top of the hill but away from everyone else, and that is Maleficent. And the fact that she is awesome. Yeah, and she is such a diva, and I love her look. And Sleeping Beauty really hit me when I was a kid, because that was the, you can tell kind of how old a person is by what Disney animated movies they were able to watch because of the vault. So it was for me, it was Sleeping Beauty, it was Lady and the Tramp, Alice in Wonderland, and no, I had the tape of Fox and the Hound. I think it was mainly, there's probably one other one I can't think of, but those were the ones until the Renaissance happened, when I got to just enjoy. Beauty and the Beast was the one that really hit me. I know that was the one that.
I mean, I loved The Little Mermaid, but yeah. I think, yeah, there was just something that really hit well with like Beauty and the Beast. But I had actually considered Maleficent as a trailer, but I again changed my mind.
Yes, so this is getting into the Disney era where they don't want a bad guy, they just want sort of like a misunderstanding or a, yeah, like in Frozen there's no real bad guy. Oh, actually Hans, I will say Hans is probably,
Hans is like that third act plot twist
that
the first time I saw this, every single person in the movie, and again when I saw it again, when you find out like he reveals himself as the bad guy, everybody gasped. It was loud. Nobody saw it coming. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like how you've just done this completely different thing from the usual, and it works.
Yes. I mean, I knew something was up because even by Disney standards, the fact that they kept mentioning you're falling in love with the guy you just met, and that is a Disney staple. Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, all fall in love the minute they meet the prince. And the fact that Elsa's like, you can't marry a guy you just met. Even Kristoff is like, really? You want to marry a guy you just met? I'm like, okay. Spoilers, the movie Get Out will be coming up on the show soon. And I'm watching the first bit of Get Out. And just the way that Jordan Peele is hinting at these seeds, like, oh, my grandmother loved this kitchen so much. We just wanted to get a piece of her in there. And then you walk in and Betty Gabriel's sort of standing there with a creepy ass smile. Going, hello. I'm like, oh my God, they're leaving a piece of her in the kitchen. Fuck.
I mean, that's like one of my favorite freaking movies of the last whatever many years.
Yeah, you're realizing, oh my God, Jordan Peele, like, you're doing everything. My main thing with Frozen, even though I love that twist of Hans being Prince Charming, but he's actually a villain and is marrying Anna to try and be a king because he's 13th in line. He's never going to get any power, so he has to marry well. That twist is amazing, especially the line of only someone loved you, because it's got to be true love's kiss, which is, again, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Cinderella, the kiss will save you. And it doesn't. I like the fact that Disney's like, yeah, we're not going to do that. But there's something about the just the click of it. I'm like, I don't know if you've said... Look, I think my main thing with Frozen is I'm more of a Moana girl, which I think everyone has their Disney, which is the point of Disney. You each have princesses that you like. I am just more in Moana's camp than I am Elsa and Anna's. So when I watch, even though I'm a white lady from New Zealand, the movie about the Polynesian islands and mythology just feels more like home because I did grow up in New Zealand and I was surrounded by that stuff.
I mean, I didn't grow up in freezing snow.
I know. And so it's kind of weird, neither did I. And I like winter.
I don't know what like personal connection there is with something like that. I mean, and I love Moana as well. Like, yeah, I think that's a great, fun film again, it's like one sort of person's story where you've got here, it's like the two person story, but it's not the typical, like both of them are very not that typical Disney sort of princess or girl type story, and I like that they were really trying to break the mold, which I think we saw with like the Princess and the Frog, and I mean you haven't seen it yet, but then you do with Tangled. So I liked that things were kind of changing and we're not getting the same thing that we've gotten for like 50 years, and we're doing these are based on something, but let's do it in a different way.
Elsa is a queen, she's standing on her own two feet, she's kind of meant to be the villain, but she's not. She's like, can't you just not be a mutant? Can you try just not being a mutant?
It's pretty much like the parents, you could see the parents pretty much saying that to her.
It's like, oh no, our child's gay, so we just need to keep her hidden and
locked in the closet.
Locked in the closet kind of thing. Like, that's literally what it is. It is.
I mean, she's locked in her room because of her powers.
Exactly. Watching it, I kept going, this movie has everything I should really love. I mean, you have a diva of a queen who is Elsa, you have the whole flipping the usual princess story of her falling in love and her one true kiss and the true love's kiss, and you're complete. I mean, even when she kisses Kristoff at the end, it's just a kiss. They are not in actually love. They just really like each other, like, and they want to be cutesy and kissy kind of faces and all that kind of thing. And it's snow. I love snow. I never lived in it, which is probably why I love snow. if I lived in snow, I'd probably be different. I'm like, snow's kind of cool. And I'm trying to watch this going, okay, what isn't about this movie that I'm not getting that, this is bringing back... Because I watched the first episode of the new X-Men 97, and all the nostalgia came rushing back, and it was like the most amazing dopamine rush. Because I'm like, I remember watching this as a kid. They've got the credits right, and it was exactly this. They've redone the credits, but they've added Bishop and Morpha to it now, and it's just like, this is awesome. Watching Frozen, I'm like going, okay, why aren't I getting that hit? I love Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast is kind of my Disney movie. I adore Sleeping Beauty. I adore all these kind of Disney movies that are like this. And I love Moana. What it is about this movie that it's not kind of getting it? And I'm thinking, one, it feels, for me, not for you because you love this, but for me, it does feel like it's rushing through certain points. And I don't think I love the music. I like Let It Go because that is the most diva song thing. But something about the other music, I'm not convinced.
I mean, that's fair.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I like Consider the Coconut more than I do I want to feel the sun on my snow, like song from.
I like Olaf's little song. I enjoy the music, and I'm not like the biggest musical person, despite the fact I love all these Disney musical movies and a whole bunch of other musicals. I'm like, do I really not like them? But
no, if you like musical, them. You just like a certain kind.
Hits, it hits with me. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That doesn't mean it takes it away for anyone else. It just has to sort of resonate with me. And I think something about Frozen just resonates with me, and that's fine with me. I'll love it. And people can say it's overrated or whatever. I'm like, yeah, cool. Say whatever you want. That's your thing. But this is my thing. And that's how I feel about it. So,
which I love. And actually, apart from Let It Go, what is your other favorite song in Frozen? Do you have one or?
Probably. Do you want to build a snowman?
Because
it turns into like a cutesy thing between the sisters, but then it's also heartbreaking because Elsa's not allowed to go and build a snowman with Anna.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart a little bit every time.
No, I mean, there is a sweetness to when Anna's just trying to get her to come out, like, come play with me. But Elsa's afraid that she's going to hurt her sister, which is understandable because she did, even though it was purely an accident.
It was accidental, but it's like it's a song that gives you a lot of emotions through the song with what you're seeing with this sort of setup, so I think it worked really well. But again, Let It Go is a bona fide classic. And
have you seen Ted Lasso?
No.
There's a moment when one of the lead characters, she owns it, Hannah someone. She's meant to be the owner of the football club and is kind of mean. And she starts singing. They're at a karaoke bar and she sings Let It Go to her goddaughter, because this is a West End trained singer who's also in Spamalot and a few other things. She nails the song. Like, it's like, holy shit, you're incredible. If you don't know, she's also in Game of Thrones. She's the Shame Woman as well. So but she sings Let It Go. And the whole point of it is that Ted Lasso is about to have a panic attack. But the song is kind of incredible. And it's kind of when you see everyone kind of starting to bond and be friends. But when people start bursting up if you remember back in 2013, that song was everywhere.
It was everywhere.
You could not get away from Idina Menzel singing.
No, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah. The cold never bothered me anyway. Well, now they know. Like, it's an amazing coming out song. It's about just letting it go, this is who I am, so people need to kind of deal with it kind of thing. Even though I think poor Elsa in this movie is kind of tortured a little bit too much. Okay. This is the thing. I've always been an Anna girl. Like, I like Anna. She is funny. She's cool. She's played by Kristen Bell. She's very, very funny. And she's kind of, for me, the heart of the movie. And I guess if you're going to get Idina Menzel, you have to give her a good belter. Like, why?
Why
else are you going to get her in there? So
You sort of need that one kind of particular song.
Yeah.
To get you. And I think we all have our favorite songs from like Disney movies and whatnot, but like Anna is like the heart and soul of the film, because she is essentially the main character with Elsa.
And she gets a little sidelined because Elsa's so awesome.
Elsa kind of is, you know, the secondary character, but both together I think work really well. Like, I adore the scenes with the two sisters together, but when they're apart and you see like the different things they're doing, like, I think it just really works. But I think the sort of the blossoming friendship that Anna has with Kristoff and Olaf and Sven, it's all very cute and I really like it.
Yeah, it is very cute. I will give you that. Maybe a bit like sometimes Olaf, and this could be just a Josh Gad thing, maybe a bit too cute. Like, he is the ultimate optimism kind of.
Yeah.
He's just pure optimism. And I think he is there because, I mean, it's kind of that formula Disney does well. Every Disney's got to have that sidekick that's the comic relief. I mean, in Little Mermaid, it's Sebastian the Crab. In Beauty and the Beast, it's Cogsworth and Lumiere. In Lion King, it's Timon and Pumbaa. And they've always tried to copy that kind of dynamic. I think it works best in the 90s, those three movies I mentioned. That's when you get that kind of sidekick humanized kind of animal object or whatever, I think that's kind of when it works. I don't necessarily think, even in something like Moana, don't love the chicken.
I love the chicken.
I know it's Alan Tudyk, who is like the king of Disney. Like, he's done about 16,000 of them. And I know he's the chicken, but... And he's also the Duke, who you think is the bad guy.
He is. He's the one you think is the he's going to be the bad guy. And it's great when you hear his voice.
It's like,
His voice work's always great. But I love the fucking chicken. That was one of the big highlights of Moana, because I love that chicken.
I'm not a fan of the chicken. I know she needs someone to talk to, but I'm just like, just get her to talk to Maui. Like, I love their banter. I love the fact that Maui's a dick, because he kind of is. It's when I learned that he was a Polynesian god, not just a New Zealand one. Like, I thought, no, wait, he's ours. I'm like, no, it's Polynesia. Yeah, I think sometimes even in something like Pocahontas, that's when the sidekick started going, oh, Disney needs to put these in every movie, don't they? They're not, they're always going to have. I mean, Disney's famous for the friendly animals that will help you make a dress, like in Snow White and Sleeping Beauty. Now I'm like, okay, now they're just in every.
They're just putting some things in there for the sake of, like, comic relief.
Exactly.
It doesn't always hit, though.
No. And I don't think Olaf does for me personally, though in saying that, I don't think the chicken does as well. And I know the chicken has a name, but I'm just like, it's a chicken.
It is a chicken. It's a very cute chicken.
it's a cute chicken. It's still a chicken. But that is just sort of me being a bit cynical about sometimes how Disney does its thing. Like, even the movie I was trying to talk about before and was butchering it, Encanto, kind of does that a little bit. No way. I think that is Pixar, because Pixar goes out of its way to make me cry. So yeah, maybe
Pixar is the one that wants to make you cry.
Yeah. And I'm like watching Encanto going, oh crap. Why are you doing this to me, Disney? I mean, Pixar. But this is really interesting about how Disney kind of is so good at branding. Like, it knows that it went through, as I said, when we were talking about Wicked, Disney went through a thing where it didn't want to be in the princess business anymore, because I guess there's only so much money you can make from little girls when there's these boys over there who are not gonna buy into. It's a weird dynamic of girls will also watch the Star Wars and the Marvel, so they'll buy those products, but boys won't watch a movie about a princess and buy those products. It's just gonna be the little girl. So I kind of felt that when Disney's Renaissance era was kind of ending, which was all about the princess, because they tried to make Strange Planet, a few other things, to try and get that boy market, it wasn't working. So they were like, well, we could just buy Marvel and Star Wars.
We can just have the monopoly on everything. But
yeah,
I think it's interesting in that Renaissance that we did have something like Aladdin, which focused on the male character, and Princess Jasmine was not quite a main character. So I think that kind of mixed things up, because then we got The Lion King, which is an animal story. So they were definitely trying different things.
But I don't think it worked. I mean, there's the rumor going around that even Aladdin wasn't boy enough, and it gave us the Pride Boys, because in an earlier version, Aladdin had a mother and she sang a song about being proud of her boy, but they cut it. And they saw that as, well, you don't want us being proud of the boys. I'm like, they made a whole story about Aladdin. He was the main character. And that is why they're called the Proud Boys. And now they're a terrorist organization. So it is kind of strange, but you could see them going, okay, we need that boy market. We need that boy market. And I think they are now going, oh, we can go back to the princess market, because that is our heritage kind of stuff. And I know there's a new movie that's just come out that does introduce a new Disney princess. But yeah, it's kind of strange how they were obviously making Tangled, they were making Frozen, but at the same time they were like, okay, how do we get the boys to like us? Right, we'll buy Marvel, because it was Paramount first, and by the time they made the Avengers, I'm pretty sure Disney owned it by that stage, or they bought it the 2 years maybe after.
I'm not quite sure. I can't actually quite remember when that happened. Like, everything in my head happened a year ago. But it could be 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I just don't know or remember. But I think, like, in terms of, like, the Disney kind of animated movies, I think they're at their best when they're taking chances and doing something, like, a bit different than what they're doing. Like, as I mentioned, sort of Aladdin was something different, or The Lion King was something a bit different. It's still that royalty stuff, but we've got the animals, and then doing something completely different, like The Emperor's New Groove, which is a fantastic, wonderful, funny movie.
Bombed at the time, but is now one of my favorite. Just legitimately one of my favorite.
I've always loved it. Like that was another one that I just loved, had fun with. And I don't think you need to stick with like a princess or this or that. Like, just make something that's interesting and tells a good story. And
yes,
at least I feel like that's kind of what Frozen gave me, was something I enjoyed, you know?
It really, really does. Though I think Disney's always been so concerned, even back in the 1930s and 40s, with its brand, which probably made why Walt Disney was so smart and made it so successful. He knew Mickey Mouse was the brand, which is why now it's called the House of Mouse. But you're right, when they take chances like they did with The Emperor's New Groove, when they made Snow White, was a huge risk. They didn't even know if people wanted to see a full-length animated movie, and they decided to go, well, let's just make it color. I love the fact that they went all in on Ashmore and what's his name to make Little Mermaid. They went, oh, let's just make it a Broadway musical. Yes. And they, I mean, as much as, even though I don't love Little Mermaid, the song of Part of Your World is a classic. It's amazing. It's iconic. Yeah. And then they kind of go from there. But I think it's really interesting when you're looking at Frozen, where Disney was trying to be and what to do. And it kind of went, okay, we're going to do this with Frozen, but they took a chance on it. Because it is so queer-coded, because it is really kind of saying, oh, actually, our princesses don't need a prince.
Our princesses don't need to be a princess.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff. And, you know, we don't need overt, like, prince and princess romantic relationships. The princess in this film, Anna, is going to hang out with Kristoff and his weird relationship with his reindeer.
And his trolls.
And there's trolls for some reason. They're adorably cute.
That troll song, I was like, oh, okay, I could do without the troll song. Okay,
I like the troll song.
This works for you, which I love.
It works for me. I'm just a Frozen nutcase. I'm probably the biggest, like, adult fan in this country of this movie, I'm sure.
No, I can see why, because I think Frozen speaks to a lot of people. It speaks to Elsa is not just the woman who's standing on her own and kind of isn't a princess, she's a queen. She's also an outsider. She's also that, and they don't, when Disney does outsiders, they're the weird people who come like, I like to read. I want to walk on the ground. I have to be taken away to be protected by the Wicked Witch, or I'm the servant like Cinderella. It's these typical fairy tale tropes. And they're taking this as like, what if, I mean, they've already done it with Maleficent, but they were like, but what if Witch was cool? What if Witch was actually just a sad girl who wanted to be accepted and actually had power, not just in the magical terms, but actually in the royal terms? She's the ruler of Arendelle.
So I think, yeah, like there's certain points for Disney where it's very typical and it's like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
But even if it's not, like, I guess financially successful, I find it more interesting when they do take chances. And again, like Frozen, I was not expecting the movie I got when I first watched it. And I was just like, wow, this is fantastic. I love this. This is so for me. So yeah, I liked that.
Yeah. Are you more of an Anna or Elsa girl?
I don't know. It's difficult because I like them both.
Yeah,
so I don't know if I could actually really pick, to be fair.
There's a story that Kristen Bell tells on the late night circus of on Halloween, her daughter wanted to go dressed as Elsa, so she had to go dressed as Elsa. She's like, you sure you want to go as Anna? She's like, no, I like Elsa. She's like, oh, man.
Well, she could have just dressed up like Anna, and they could have had the cutest dress up ever.
I know, but she wanted her, apparently her daughter wanted her to dress up as Elsa, so she was like, this is not fair. Even my kid likes Elsa more. But
she's got the big song.
Yes, and that song does mean so much. I mean, that kind of works in Disney musicals, which they don't do as much because they're kind of even scared of musicals, which I'm like, okay, come on, guys. They treat it like a Broadway musical, which I saw. That was the whole thing about The Little Mermaid. They went in and said, actually, if we treat this like a Broadway musical and had Broadway caliber singers, we might be actually do something. And that started which I didn't actually know until much later. I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. Because when you watch Beauty and the Beast, it starts with, this is a quiet village, every day like the one before, little town full of little people. Yes, I've seen Beauty and the Beast. quite a few times. Waking up to say bonjour. It always starts with that kind of big musical kind of moment, like a Broadway, and the songs kind of click into the acts. Like Let It Go is very much in the end of the first act. That kind of, which is a big, usually meant to be a big song moment. Usually that or the intermission. Like in Wicked, Defying Gravity is just before the intermission. So that is the big yes. number. Going back, Disney did buy Marvel in 2009. So,
there we go.
Yes, they were
still very early days for the Marvel Cinematic Universe then.
Yes, but they saw Iron Man and the Hulk and went, oh, we need this. Like, this is something that's, which I didn't realize, actually. Like, I think it's because all the first wave movies have the Paramount in front of them. So I think it was like a deal, first of all, like they do with Spider-Man, which I'm still waiting for when Disney goes, oh, Sony, you think you have Spider-Man? Nah, he's ours now. Like something, they're going to pull some move.
Probably, because I don't know what Sony's doing with every weird Spider-Man character that exists.
Well, apparently he was in the jungle with the Amazon with my mother studying spiders just before she died. It's the only thing I know about Madame Web.
I haven't seen it. I don't know if I want to.
Neither have I. I was meant to go see it, and then I went and saw Zone of Interest instead. Much better movie, I've got the feeling.
It's probably the better choice. Yeah. Yes.
The way I tend to see Frozen is I'm looking at it from, okay, what were Disney doing at this time? And they were taking a big risk. And I don't, because apparently even Disney didn't think that this movie was going to be as popular as it was. It caught them by surprise. They were like, okay, if we start making these, if we keep investing in these Marvel movies, if we keep investing in all these things, because I think that what Star was like in 2012.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to make money from that. And the princess can be kind of like a straight to DVD thing, and then Frozen hit. Like it like made all the money, and they were just like, whoa, okay, cool. They still like princesses, which I'm kind of glad they're not leaving the princess in the past. I kind of like the fact that they're reinventing it. Even if Frozen doesn't completely work for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So how many times have you seen Frozen?
I lost count. Yeah, it's been a lot.
Yeah.
It's had a lot of rewatches.
No, I'm kind of glad that you got to share your love for it, even if I was like going,
it's all
can
right.
we consider the coconut? The speech does not belong in Frozen. But like, but the coconut, can we consider it?
yes, we can. Yes. But yes, I love Frozen, and those are my final thoughts.
Frozen's awesome, guys. Listen to Marcy. Don't listen to me.
Let it give you joy.
Yes, it is a pure fairy tale, but with a strong, which is maybe why Elsa is such a dominant character, because she is the queen. She is the one kind of who has all the power. Even though it is Anya who is the lead of the movie, she is kind of still the younger sister.
Yeah.
She's kind of the one that, she's still the princess. And you look at, oh, well, Elsa's the diva. She's the capable, powerful one. And I think that's kind of why a lot of, which I love the fact that little girls, every time they go to a dress-up thing, dress up as Elsa. Like, anytime there's like a Frozen thing, you see all these little girls in these blue dresses. No one dresses as Anya.
No, it's all about Elsa.
It is all about Elsa. And if you're going to have a role model, Elsa's a pretty good freaking good one.
Yeah, I would say so. And just remember, the cold never bothered you anyway.
It really doesn't. It will never do. Just let it go.
Let it go.
Just let it go. Any other final thoughts on Frozen?
I love it. And that's as far as it goes. I love Frozen. I of course always recommend people to watch it, but you know, not everyone will. People are very mixed and weird about Frozen because it was ended up being so successful and was everywhere for so long.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's all died down a little bit now. So I think you can just enjoy Frozen for what it is.
Yeah. And if not, just what's your favorite Disney animated movie? Everyone has one. That's kind of the beauty
exactly.
of it. Like, I kind of want to watch The Emperor's New Groove because that movie is amazing and it's one of the greatest comedies of the 2000s.
It really is. It's fantastic. Yeah. It's wonderful. It's got like what a lovely voice cast that film has.
Oh, that is just, it's the best voice cast and everything just works so well. And it is so uplifting and delightful and even though it's about a guy who has to learn to be good, it turns into a llama. It's beautiful. And Frozen is good. I'm not saying Frozen isn't a good movie. It's just not my Disney movie. And yes. That is the beauty of it. Like, I can just go watch Beauty and the Beast. I can go watch Moana. And exactly. You can watch Frozen again and then watch exactly. Sleeping Beauty. So that is the beauty of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is the Sleeping Beauty of it all.
Exactly. All movies deliver diva in their own way. Before we go, please tell people where they can find your good work, Marcy.
Literally, supermarcy.com has pretty much everything. You can find the many podcasts I co-host there. The Super Network is on all the main socials, so you can keep up to date that way if you like. And After Dark with Super Marcy is available on all the podcast players and stuff, and you can just look it up. And I'm Super Marcy on all the socials. I'm Super_Marcy on Letterboxd, and you can see all the weird and wacky things I am probably watching for podcasts.
Yes, definitely. And it's some weird and wacky stuff because she does Tubi Tuesday. So sometimes I'll see an image and go, oh boy.
Yep. So you Marcy. Probably guess which one was like picked for Tubi Tuesday.
I can. Yeah. I can. I'm starting to get who picked what, which is, yes. As usual, Schlockenor Twinning Titles is all on the same pod or on the where you find pods. Schlockenor 1 or Reading Geek on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, all those ones. And yes, we will be back next month with another Twinning Titles. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.